Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287, and of course, get more content and information on the podcast at the website dsmsports.net. Really psyched for today's show. We're going to be delving into the world of Major League Baseball, specifically talking about reaching some younger fans and using Snapchat as a strategy, as we talk to John Pruitt, the social media supervisor for the Arizona Diamondbacks. But before we get to our conversation with John today, we have this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is really a great tool, a website that helps you primarily work with Twitter chats, but really works for any hashtag that you want to be tracking and get more information about. And it's called twubs.com, T-W-U-B-S.com. It's a free website, and you can look up any hashtag. It's especially useful for following chats. You can participate in any Twitter chat by using the site and follow a Twitter chat using the site. But it really has a lot of cool little easy features that you can use to get more information about a hashtag or a chat. There's an easy embed code you can use to embed a hashtag on any website you want. So if there's a hashtag you're tracking for your organization or your team that you want to feature, there's an easy embed code that you can use to get that showing up. You can also see who is contributing most to a hashtag, as well as those members who register themselves with the Twitter chat or with the hashtag. It's really a great way to get a quick sneak peek of who's associated with a Twitter chat and who's associated with a hashtag. You can also use it to look up other Twitter chats that are associated with the website. A lot of people, including one of my favorites, the SB chat, sports hashtag SB chat, every Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, or 9:30 p.m. Eastern, excuse me, they register their chat, and there's all sorts of chats registered through the Twubs directory. You can look them up by category, by schedule, and really get a good picture of all the different chats out there. And most of them that are registered have a little description as well. So if you want to discover other conversations that are going on out there via a hashtag, whether it's through a live chat every week or through just a hashtag that's being used to keep track of certain content over time, I think you'll find the Twubs website really helpful. So take a look at it. Some really cool things you can see. Search your favorite hashtag, or next time you have a Twitter chat, use that website to take part in it and learn a little bit more about the chat, about the hashtag, and about the users who are taking part in it. Everyone's always looking for an easy tool to use for their Twitter chats, and Twubs is the one. All right, guys, that's the episode's helpful tool. Give it a shot. Check it out. TWUBSTwubs.com. All right, we'll be right back to have a really good conversation. You're going to learn a lot from John Pruitt, social media supervisor for the Arizona Diamondbacks, coming right up. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, but now we're ready to have a really good conversation. Really psyched about our guest today. We're talking with John Pruitt, a friend of mine back in the Arizona days. He is the social media supervisor with the Arizona Diamondbacks, who do a really good job on social media, and we're psyched to learn from John today. So welcome to the podcast tonight, John.
Thanks, Neil. Glad to be here.
So really glad to have a conversation with you coming up. We're going to talk a lot about all things Diamondbacks. But before we get into the meat of the discussion, you know, give us an idea about where you come from, your background, your career path coming up in the game, and any tips along the way for folks that want to do what you do.
My career path, it's kind of been a little all over the place. Worked for about 4.5 years after I graduated from undergrad up in Northern California, which is where I'm from, doing compensation research, so it was very much on the analytics side. Came out to Arizona for grad school to get my MBA at ASU, and as I was going through that process of applying to grad school, was really doing some soul searching, trying to figure out what I wanted to do for the rest of my career. And sports has always been a big passion of mine. ASU at the time had a sports business MBA program, so came out, checked it out, seemed like a great fit, and ended up working out, ended up coming out here. And during the second year of that program, I actually got an internship with the Diamondbacks, more so on the marketing research side, which is what my background was at the time.
So did you study marketing when you were an undergrad as well then?
I actually studied finance and economics.
Okay. So it's been, and that was up at Santa Clara, is that where you were?
Correct.
Okay. So you had a background in more finance and analytics a little bit, and then you got into marketing when you were at the ASU program.
Yeah, so the sports business program was fairly heavily focused on the marketing side. And so when I got the internship with the Diamondbacks, that's what they had me doing, working in their marketing department, using my analytical abilities to really sift through a lot of the information and data that was becoming available. Analytics at that time, this was in 2010, was quickly emerging as a relatively new field within sports that a lot of the organizations were trying to figure out how to capitalize on the wealth of information available. So I was sifting through a lot of data, crunching numbers, and trying to help the organization make better business decisions.
So at this point, where was data for the Diamondbacks at this point? Was it mostly looking at like their ticket sales data, their website?
Yeah, it was primarily, it was actually a little bit of both, but primarily on the ticket sales side. Okay. And then I also oversaw some of the market research that we were doing. So we would do fan surveys, season ticket holder surveys, partner surveys, things like that, just to gather information that we could utilize to, again, just help us make better decisions moving forward.
Okay. And that position ended up, when you graduated from ASU, finished that master's, that turned into a job with Diamondbacks?
So about 3 months after I graduated, they did end up offering me a full-time position.
So it seemed like really that having that comfort with analytics and data, we talk a lot about that nowadays, about how it's important for anyone coming up in sports business to have that comfort with numbers, but you were kind of ahead of the game there, already coming up with that background. It seemed like they helped you a lot to get into the sports business area.
No, for sure. And that it's funny because, yes, like they clearly identify, okay, we have a need for this. Otherwise, they wouldn't have found a position for me. And like I said, it was an emerging area, much as social media then became an emerging area, which kind of explains how I got into there. So 2010 season, 2011, got hired in 2010. And in 2011, we moved social media over from our communications department into marketing. And at that time, just based on stuff that I had been learning in school and just general interest, really had some different ideas and things that we could try to leverage social media as a business tool. So spoke with my boss at the time, who's the head of marketing for the Diamondbacks, and we developed a social media plan for 2011. But again, just based on how hiring works within sports, we weren't in a position to hire anybody to handle our social media. Mm-hmm. So when it came down to execute it, it basically was, all right, well, you know, you have all these cool ideas. Why don't you go ahead and start running with some of this? And then 2011 just turned out to be an incredible year for us on the field and off. We opened up our new spring training facility up at Salt River Fields in Scottsdale. We hosted the All-Star game for the first time at Chase Field, and then we ended up winning the division and going to the playoffs. So it was kind of the perfect storm for us, and we really saw social media explode at that time. So as the season went on, it just became an increasingly increasingly more and more of my day-to-day responsibilities.
Now, John, before we go ahead, give our listeners an idea of how was social media really, how did it fit into the MLB club? Then I know with MLB Advanced Media, they've loosened the reins over time with how much control they've given to each club in terms of what they can post, their marketing, and was it really an offshoot of MLB Advanced Media in the early days, and you guys got a little more autonomy as time went on?
Yeah, that's exactly it. When we kind of took it over in a way, all we were pretty much doing with it was RSS feeds, and it was Facebook and Twitter only. Instagram wasn't even around back then, I don't think, or it was just becoming a new platform at that time. And we weren't really doing much. We were sharing news articles, really trying to use social media as a way to drive people to the website, which is still an important part of our strategy. But back then, that was 100% of our strategy. It wasn't necessarily about engaging fans or sharing content in real time. It was more just, okay, how can we use this to sell tickets, or how can we use this to encourage fans to visit the website and read news articles and things like that. So it was very, very basic back then.
Was there a light bulb moment or an inflection point where you guys realized there's a lot more to social media, especially from a marketing perspective, than just broadcasting our content?
Yeah, I think we're seeing, or I was seeing other brands, other organizations who are really doing a good job with social media, and you'd read case studies or just hear about success stories, and it just seemed natural. Why couldn't sports teams do it? And other sports teams were doing it. The NBA was very quick to adapt to social media and make that a part of their business strategy. The Suns, who are right next door, and they're right at the forefront of all that. So clearly us seeing that, you know, it's something we had to react to and find ways to utilize social media. It's just a very important thing for our organization specifically, because we are young in the grand scheme of things. We've only been around since 98. The market here is very transient. You got a lot of people who are from the Midwest or from California, like myself, who grew up rooting for other teams and aren't necessarily, you know, the Diamondbacks may be a fan of their, they may be a fan of the Diamondbacks now, but it's almost like I'm a fan of their team when my team isn't playing. Right, so right. For us, we're
certainly no black and white photos of the Diamondbacks going around anytime soon.
Right. So we're really working to try to cultivate our fan base, and social media is a big part of that.
At what point did your colleagues, your boss, come to you and say, John, we think there's a role here for you to sort of take charge of our social media? And you know, was there a moment when you became the social media guy for the D-backs and kind of had it to run with?
Yeah, it was really after I worked with my boss to develop the social media plan. It just kind of fell on my shoulders where we weren't in a position to go out and hire anybody to do it. So she told me, okay, start running with it and start working. I was working very closely with MLBAM, just understanding what we could and couldn't do with social media, and just trying new things, trying to make sure that we were staying active with it, which wasn't always the case in the past. And just, you know, really keeping up with different emerging trends. Back then, a lot of social media, it was just status updates. We'd put a little quick caption together and throw something up even on Facebook. There was very little, you know, of the visual side of it, which has become, you know, 100% critical nowadays. Totally. With social media. So it's been fun, you know, being a part of it since the beginning of the 2011 season, just to watch social media evolve and be a part of that and watch it evolve within the Diamondbacks organization and just see it grow.
Were there some big moments early on, whether it was developing some early strategic plans or just even one day all of a sudden when you realized there's more to this than just another broadcast channel? There's true fan engagement going on here. There's a conversation. There's a community. And was there something where all of a sudden it just hit the Diamondbacks and maybe hit MLB Advanced Media in general, looking at the unused power of social?
I think it was probably just as that season went on, it wasn't like it just happened overnight. Just because we had neglected is probably not the right word, but we really hadn't utilized social for what it is. We weren't reading what fans were tweeting at us or what they were saying on our Facebook posts. And then in 2011, we completely changed that strategy and we started doing all that. So I think it took some time for fans to really understand that we were devoted to it. And we're going to use social media for what it truly is, which is to be social with fans. So I think it took some time kind of to win fans over, but definitely towards the end of that season, and obviously everything that happened on the field helped immensely with the team playing so well and us having so many exciting moments that fans could rally behind. But we saw it where fans were genuinely appreciative of it. We held our first social media events that season in September. We had a tweet up back when tweet ups were a thing. And we had hundreds of fans who would come out and, you know, they'd talk about social media. And it was really just this, you know, we had the interesting discussion about social media and how it relates to sports. And we had different panelists. And our CEO actually was the host of that. And he had launched his Twitter account shortly before then. So he was getting on board. So just kind of seeing this wave of social media interest amongst our core fans. I think that's where the organization truly recognized, like, wow, this thing is pretty powerful and does have some potential. And we're making the right decisions here in terms of devoting resources to it.
I will say that I'm sure a lot of social media coordinators and managers out there that they're quite jealous that you get to work for such a social and innovative guy like Derek Hall out there. But tell me, I guess, was there a point where you had to almost convince your colleagues and maybe bosses there that not every piece of social media content or all the efforts of social media have to be marketing related? Was there also something to the more long form engagement and the ROI over time? Or was it really early on, was it how can we use this or how can we use our time, how can we use our content to push our marketing goals only?
No, I think they kind of – really let me run with it, to be honest. I mean, and trusted me to utilize it how I best saw fit. And I probably didn't make the right decision all the time, but obviously it was within the marketing department. So marketing and trying to utilize it to specifically to generate ticket sales was one of our top goals, mm-hmm. but it wasn't the primary focus for us by any means.
Okay.
There's a lot of trust to kind of say, okay. And I think part of it too was, that I was learning as I went. I mean, like I said, I did not have a background in social media whatsoever. I just had an interest in it and a passion for it and had some ideas and luckily was in the kind of the right place at the right time when social media really started exploding, for businesses and was able to now build a career out of it. But it was a lot of just kind of trying new things and just learning by doing. And, we definitely made mistakes, but it's okay. That wasn't the right thing to do. Let's learn from it. And next time let's not make those same mistakes.
Did you have fairly free rein from early on, or I mean, how was it kind of how has it evolved with MLB Advanced Media from when you really took the reins of social media for the Diamondbacks? I mean, were you not as able to easily share what content you wanted or engage the way you wanted until sort of over time MLB Advanced Media gave the clubs more independence?
Somewhat. There were definitely some restrictions in place when we started, really, really trying to utilize it to drive people to our club site was the number one thing. Mm-hmm. Where anytime if we were posting a video, for instance, we'd post a link and then the video, we'd redirect fans to go to dbacks.com rather than fans, rather than fans being able to consume that content within Facebook and Twitter. And part of that was just also based on, back then, it wasn't really possible to embed
right.
video. So it was just by nature, well, if we can't really do this in a way that is easy for them to consume the content within that platform, let's at least bring them to our platform, which is set up for that.
Okay. Were you able to sort of, and even now, pick and choose the content that you're putting out there on each channel, or is some of it just coming straight from MLB Advanced Media, like when they get a good highlight from a game or they get a good GIF, for example, that it just is put out there, or is it given to you to use as you see fit?
It's more of the latter, or we'll request GIFs if we need it. MLB's grown their social part, or I should say MLBAM has grown their social part immensely. There's a staff out there now of probably 24 people at least who are helping us on a day-to-day basis. And, they're an incredible help to us. But we really control in terms of when things are going out, how they're going out, for the most part.
And the voice as well, I'm sure, is huge. And the cadence and how you guys balance, GIFs and video and photos and status updates and retweets and all that. And going into that, I guess, a little bit more, who do the Diamondbacks want to be? What are you trying to accomplish on social media to really – to build those long-term fans and build those fans who are going to be Diamondbacks fans for life? How has it influenced the brand and the voice you try to put out there on social?
I mean, first and foremost, we've always really prided ourselves on being a fan-friendly organization. And I think a lot of other teams do the same thing. It's kind of the default. If you don't have a history of success on the field, like you don't have 27 world championships like the Yankees do, or maybe that's kind of the default way to go about branding yourselves, but it truly trickles throughout the organization, where, we understand what's important. It's the fans, it's the community, and it's just who we are as the Arizona Diamondbacks. So from a social standpoint, it's making sure that we're following kind of that same mantra, that we are reading and responding to every single person that's talking about us, to the extent that that's even possible. But using social media not only as a way to, obviously we want to show great, interesting content behind the scenes, getting them to know the players and what they're like both on and off the field, but also showing, who we are as an organization and how much we give back to the community. And some of the different off-field initiatives that we have.
I think so, you guys do a great job of balancing in the baseball and the community, and that definitely does go a long way in really building that long-term fan affinity between the fan and the organization, and really being a part of the greater Arizona community. And you guys definitely do seem to do a good job of jumping on platforms that can help you engage that younger audience. And with all the content you have at your disposal, with games almost every single day, and you know, no shortage of highlights and photos and interviews, how do you sort of balance it all and decide where to put what content, which platforms to focus on over time? I imagine it's not an easy task, but what goes into those decisions?
Well, we're actually in a position now where I think our strategy is a little more defined by platform, whereas in the past, and just to explain, you know, from 2011 till about 2014, I guess, it was primarily myself running social media. This past season, we've actually hired a new coordinator to come in and handle and help out with it. So we've actually increased our resources in terms of what we're devoting to social. So with that, that's allowed us to, I think, spend more time focusing on the strategy side as opposed to just the day-to-day execution of it. Just with being a baseball team, I mean, it's, you get through one day, you get through one game, you wake up and you got another one that you got to get through. And it doesn't leave a whole lot of time to think about how you're going to approach Instagram that day or Snapchat that day or, mm-hmm. or Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And I think just over time, our strategy just kind of evolved. We've seen, okay, this works on Facebook, this works on Instagram, this works on Twitter, but you know, maybe it doesn't work on a different platform. So with that, I think, you know, we try to understand who our audience is, knowing, you know, social media in general still skews very young. But you know, there are some differences. Our Twitter audience, for example, it's 80% or roughly 80% male. It's kind of the,
wow.
It's the diehards that, really are looking to Twitter for information. And it's really, that's the function of Twitter for a lot of people, is it's a news source. So, our approach there is, you know, just keeping our fans well informed. And as soon as information breaks, it's coming from us. Whereas with like Snapchat, for instance, where it's very young, kind of that millennial generation, you know, the language we're speaking there is completely different. There's definitely been a little bit of a convergence, in which big overarching theme of our social media is just to have fun, because we want our fans to have fun.
And fun certainly does not as contingent on wins and losses. You can have fun no matter what. And at the end of the day, when you're trying to get fans to come out to 81 plus home games, I mean, it's got to be fun over anything else, because you can't, at the end of the day, you can't really control what happens on the field as much.
Exactly. We're talking about sports too. We're not out there, you know, saving lives or doing anything that's changing the world. You know, we're playing a game and trying to entertain fans. So to the extent that we can use social media and kind of have that same, you know, hey, it's not as serious. It's kind of, you know, it's a game that we're playing, and that's kind of the approach we're going to take. It fits.
I love that mindset. It really does not go articulated when spoken enough, in that it really is just all about having fun, and the fans that are coming at you for content, they are looking at it as a departure from their everyday stressful lives. It's a way to let go, have fun, and cheer on their team. That's great. So let's get into that a little bit more about, you started talking about Snapchat, and it's one thing I did want to spend some time with you on today, John, is because I have an unabashed big fan of the Diamondbacks Snapchat. All your stories are so well done. They really weave well together and really tell the story of what's going on through Diamondbacks and really reach that young audience like you spoke to. So I guess what led the way for you guys adopting Snapchat early on among some of the other sports clubs out there, and what was sort of the strategy from day one?
Well, I think our strategy from day one wasn't all that great. We were kind of just, Snapchat, let's just kind of learn about this and see what it is. I mean, we had heard a lot about it before we decided to launch our account. Growing significantly in popularity, a lot of the people that I, you know, a lot of my friends, a lot of my coworkers, they were using it, enjoying it. So it just clearly seemed like, okay, this is something that it's not just a fad. This is here. Like it just seemed like there was enough growth happening when we decided to launch our account that it would be worthwhile.
So initially then, was it more about there are fans to be reached here, or was it this medium allows us to do something with content that we weren't previously able to do?
It was more of the former, more of this is an audience that we can now reach.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, admittedly, we probably didn't develop as good of a strategy with how to utilize Snapchat. You know, I don't think this year we've really taken it to another level, and a lot of that's because of the additional resource that we've been able to secure. But we understand, okay, this is what the kids are using these days. They're not on Facebook, they're not on Twitter, they're using Snapchat. So if we want to cultivate them, and as I mentioned before, for the Diamondbacks, that's one of the big things. We're trying to cultivate our fan base and grow our fan base. So we got to figure out how do we communicate with that younger generation. How do we connect with them
and get them to become fans? Fostering those folks that'll be season ticket holders 10 years from now.
Exactly.
I love that. Was it tough early on to get buy-in from all the higher ups that you're telling them? Yeah, we know we're getting all this great content, you know, from following around the behind the scenes stuff and, you know, getting player messages and all that and telling them, well, we're going to put it on this platform that it'll only be around for 24 hours instead of putting it on, you know, something that's going to drive traffic to the website or get reach from Facebook. Was that any sort of difficulty with that early on, or was there buy-in for Snapchat from day one?
There was definitely some concern, and I had some concern about it. But I think it was when Snapchat launched the story feature,
mm-hmm.
that we really recognized, okay, there's clearly something here. I mean, the fact that we can tell individual stories for each of our games, or, you know, it's not something we necessarily need to be on every game. You know, if it's a midweek game against a non-premier opponent and there's just not a whole lot going on for that particular day, we'll just take a day off of Snapchat and just let it breathe for a little bit. But it's just the way that Snapchat, what I see Snapchat, the way it differentiates itself from the other platforms is it allows you to really bring your content to one cohesive story that you can't really do that on Facebook or Twitter, because Facebook's determining what your fans are seeing based on this algorithm that they've created, or, you know, people are seeing stuff on Twitter or Instagram, but it's, you know, they're also seeing a bunch of other stuff. They're not seeing it kind of all at once. So I think based on that, we got some buy-in and were able to kind of say, okay, there's clearly something here. There's ways that we can use this that's different than the other platforms. And again, getting back to really, this is critical for us to be able to reach that younger audience.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. It's definitely one of the few platforms that really prioritize telling a cohesive story. I mean, I think maybe the Path app tried to do that early on, didn't quite catch on quite as much as Snapchat did, but it definitely does for Snapchat allow you to tell that story from beginning to finish and let fans really live it with you. And what are sort of some of the things that you look for out of Snapchat to determine what's working and what's not working and what's justifying the time and effort being put into it?
Well, we're looking at how quickly our account's growing, are people following us, and then are they telling their friends or encouraging others to follow us? And our growth rate's been really good this year. We're also looking at how many eyeballs we're getting, and it's, you know, in terms of the impressions that we see on that platform versus the other ones, it's incredible. I mean, probably 60% of our followers see our snaps, which, you know, on Twitter, we're probably talking 5%, 10%.
Seriously. That's incredible. I mean, given the average organic reach of Facebook and Twitter, that's unreal.
So we know, I mean, obviously our audience isn't quite as big on Snapchat, but, you know, we know when we're putting stuff out there, those fans that do follow us there, they're most likely going to see it.
So what is kind of the end game, or like our end game ROI for Snapchat for you guys? Is it eventually to to learn more about who those fans are that are viewing their snaps, and then, you know, move them down the sales funnel to some degree and get them to buy tickets on your website, etc., or doing straight up promotions via Snapchat, or trying to get sponsored content on there? Is there really an end game to it now, or is it still just in that early mode of let's keep growing, let's keep engaging, and we'll go from there?
I think it's definitely still in the early mode where we've talked about trying ticket offers or different promotions, but the potential is, you know, it's obviously limited. So we're really just trying to use it for the way that people like to use Snapchat, watching different stories, seeing things through the eyes of other individuals, and, you know, really enjoying an experience. For us, we're really just trying to show off how cool the experience is to go to a baseball game at Chase Field, so that when fans are watching that, that's what they want to do. They want to come down. Now, being able to say that Snapchat's having this effect and measure the ROIs, obviously that's extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. And I hope at some point we'll be able to figure out how to measure that. But for now, we're primarily focused on just creating good content that fans are going to enjoy and want to follow and engage with.
And are the analytics or data for Snapchat improving much, or is it primarily just you can see how many views you get, how many screen grabs and stuff, and the basic stuff like that still?
Yeah, that's as far as I know. Really, all we can see is we can get our follow count, we can get our views, and then our screen grabs. So it's very, very limited. Instagram also is still very limited for us. Mm-hmm. Whereas obviously now with Facebook and Twitter, it's extremely robust, and there's a lot more we can dig into, and it's just a lot easier for us to measure the success that we're having.
Not to mention the targeting you can do, and eventually, you know, retarget that audience with advertisements as well in the future. But perhaps Snapchat analytics will improve over time, especially given the recent partnership between MLB and Snapchat with the Snapchat Wednesdays. And I mean, tell me a little about how that has affected just MLB Advanced Media in general, with how they have encourage clubs to use Snapchat, maybe, or how Snapchat Wednesdays has been communicated with the clubs, and you know, what's the nature of all that for someone like you?
Well, we were actually in the first game that was featured on MLB Wednesdays back in, I want to say that was late April or so, and it was something that we heard that this agreement had been made between MLBAM and Snapchat to do the story. And then it was kind of like a few days later, okay, we're doing it, and you guys are going to be the first ones. And so it's been, I mean, some of the numbers that we've seen from being a part of, I think we've been a part of two of the MLB Wednesdays now. And I kind of wish they would have picked a different day than Wednesday, just because midweek games aren't the best for us in terms of attendance. But I mean, obviously, we're being able to expose our product and our brand to millions of people, which is pretty astounding. I mean, the power and the potential for that. So we've the first one we were featured on it quite a bit. The second one we were actually on the road, so we don't have anybody on the road that's primarily doing social. It's kind of like our PR guys who are with the team will help us out. So we actually had one of our PR guys kind of learn how to do Snapchat, and he put a few snaps together, and we actually did get content featured on the R story.
Wow.
Then as well. But it's clear, you know, it's awesome that MLB's been able to make this happen. Because I think just as a sport, you know, baseball is perceived by a lot to be something for kind of the older demographic. But clearly, you know, there's a lot to baseball that resonates with the younger generation. And the more that we can kind of show that side of it, the better off just as a league we'll be.
Oh, yeah, especially all those fans on their mobile devices. They're a lot of youngsters, a lot of the fans of tomorrow, and the ones who will be season ticket holders in the future. I guess, tell me real briefly, we're having a great conversation with John Pruitt, social media supervisor of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So we'll coming up with on this episode's charitable stat, but I've got a couple more minutes left with John. Tell me, what goes into planning a Snapchat story for you guys, especially when there is a big event happening, like the Coyotes captain Shane Doan doing a takeover for Snapchat for the night, or a special promotional night. And how do you sort of say, okay, we're gonna have all this content, and this is gonna go on Snapchat, this might go on Instagram, and here's what we want to get out of our Snapchat story. What's kind of the planning process like, and has it become a little more organized over time, I guess?
Yeah, and I think there's different things that we've learned just from trying things on different platforms in the past. When we have celebrities at games, for instance, or we do some special event, you know, theme nights at the ballpark, like Zombie Night or Star Wars Night or things like that, where we know, okay, there's going to be a lot of interest here, and it's going to give us an opportunity to talk about something different. That's definitely one of the challenges with managing and running social media for a Major League Baseball team, is that a lot of what goes on is it's very routine, and there's only so many shots of batting practice that we can show, or players signing autographs.
Right.
So once we have those other opportunities to kind of tell a different story, it's okay, well, how can we craft this in the best way possible? So that's really kind of how we approach it, is looking at it on a, you know, the homestand's upcoming. We know we've got this, this, and this. Maybe there's three different areas that we kind of target, that let's make sure we're creating a Snapchat story that's unique around this game. And then looking within that, okay, what are we doing organization-wide for that? What is marketing doing? What is the events team doing? What is, you know, is community activating it? Is corporate activating it in a certain way? And how can we integrate those and tell kind of a cohesive story where we're really giving fans a good taste of what's going on?
So it really is a lot on your plate to make sure that you understand everything that's going on with all the departments and make sure everyone is on the same page. That's certainly requires, I'm sure, a ton of internal communication before any of these events take place.
Yeah, definitely. And we have a weekly meeting where at least one or two people from each department get together, and we kind of go over, you know, here are the next, you know, our primary messages over the next 3-4 weeks, kind of here's secondary. And we just go through our day-to-day calendar just to discuss everything that's going on, and it gives everyone an opportunity to really understand what's going to take place and make sure everyone's on the same page. So definitely a lot, and that's definitely a challenge with social, but it's also something I enjoy about my job and what I do, is being able to learn and work with all the different departments and get an understanding for what they're doing and why they're doing it, and just how it helps us as a business with, you know, engaging our fans or selling tickets or whatever it may be, giving back to the community.
I love that. I say it all the time, you know, social media is the one, maybe one of the many, I guess, but one especially that's most important in terms of touching every department and really being able to amplify and help everything that every department is trying to do. So it's really important to have your finger on the pulse of everything Diamondbacks, and it sounds like you do a really good job with that. One last thing before this episode's charitable stat, John, and that is, how do you go about also trying to make sure that you are talking to the older fans, the ones that are season ticket holders, the ones that aren't on Snapchat or are on Twitter, for example? Is that something that is top of mind still for you with social, or is that more left to the traditional assets and, you know, email and website and you know, outdoor signage and stuff like that?
No, I mean, we encourage our season ticket holders to connect with us via social. We do a lot of in-game activation for social, encouraging fans to follow us. We have a season ticket newsletter that we send out that, you know, again, will include social components there. We've had social media seminars in the past where I've actually gone out and done kind of a walkthrough of this is how to use Twitter.
Wow.
Because that, I think, is that and Facebook to an extent is probably the two platforms that they may be most familiar with and most, it might be most beneficial for them, since they tend to be the diehards. They're more looking for, you know, up-to-date information, or if they happen to be at a game and one of our players has to leave for whatever reason, you know, as soon as we get an update from the clubhouse about what happened with that player and what his status is, we'll tweet that out, and we won't necessarily make an in-game announcement, so they can kind of follow on Twitter, get a notification, and then they see, okay, this is what's going on with this player. He's hurt his hand, but he's really okay, and he's day-to-day, or, you know, God forbid it's worse than that. But we try to make sure that if season ticket holders are using, so, and a lot of them are using different social media channels, that we're connecting with them, because they're clearly our most valued customer. I mean, they, and they're our most loyal fan.
Really enjoyed chatting with John Pruitt, social media supervisor for the Arizona Diamondbacks, someone who's really evolved with the medium, evolved with the organization, and really has a good mindset and a good thoughtful strategy for everything they do there from a marketing and PR and fan engagement perspective. But we'll get to know John a little bit more, have a little fun with him in our Playing with Pruitt segment coming up with some quick hitting questions. But before that, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat really relevant to our conversation today because it's all about Snapchat. And it comes from a recent article in Recode, a great blog, a tech blog. And it had the stat that on average, Snapchat's live stories that they have on there every day, in an average 24-hour period, they receive 20 million unique views. Think about that, folks. We went nuts when there were 25 million viewers for the U.S. Women's National World Cup winning team for that game. And yet, every single day on average, Snapchat's live stories are seeing 20 million unique viewers themselves. I mean, that is incredible reach, incredible deep engagement, having the attention of that many people every single day. So, and the question is, what do we do with that knowledge? When you are building a Snapchat story, as John talked about in the conversation we just had, it's really important to have a strategy behind it. Prepare ahead of time. Yes, Snapchat is really all about being in the moment and sharing the story in the moment and showing what's going on at any given time of the day. But when you can really think about it and be cohesive, be strategic, be thoughtful, you can have a reason to take advantage of all those viewers, those 20 million unique views that are seen on average. You might not be reaching those numbers every day, but you're reaching good numbers on Snapchat with viewers who are deeply engaged with your content. And unless you have a strategy for it, you're just throwing some content up there for no reason at all. Yeah, it's great to get your brand out there, great to get your name out there, but have a rhyme and reason for it. Have a story you're trying to tell. With John, it's all about, you know, making sure that he's showing how Diamondbacks are fan-friendly, how much fun they're having at a game, blowing out a promotional light so people see how much fun the promotions are, how involved they are. So next time they do have one, those fans are going to come out to the ballpark and ultimately spend money with the team. We've seen some other teams get a little more creative by soliciting fan-generated content to include in stories, getting more engagement that way, having direct ticket sales or special deals during those short-lived 24-hour stories that are getting so many views. It doesn't necessarily always need to be that blatant of a salesy call to action, but have a strategy behind it. Sit down and talk about it with your marketing team, with your PR team, with your corporate partnerships team, with your ticket sales team. As John said also, it's really important to have those conversations on a day-to-day basis because when you're dealing with social media, you are really reaching a lot of eyeballs, as this episode's shareable stat tells you. So again, that's this episode's shareable stat, 20 million unique views on average for Snapchat's live stories. So folks, the Snapchat medium has certainly matured, and it's something to be taken seriously and thoughtfully and strategically as a sports organization. All right, guys, that's this episode's shareable stat. Think about it, ponder it, put it into action, derive some insights from it. We'll be right back to have a little fun as we have our Playing with Pruitt segment with John Pruitt, social media supervisor of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So yeah, it just sounds like, you know, not every fan is going to have their son or daughter or whatnot to be able to show them how to use these social networks and also why they should be using it, the information they're missing out on. And like you spoke to, those are diehard fans, and they want to see what the D-backs are tweeting, especially if it's content that they're not able to see elsewhere.
So exactly.
Really cool, and I love the initiative from you guys.
Yeah, it definitely adds to their experience. And if we can do social really, really well and they're enjoying it, then they're going to be more engaged with the team and what's going on and more likely to renew their season tickets. So just, again, it's kind of the same strategy we have with our other fans. We're ultimately trying to get them to just become avid Diamondbacks fans.
Oh, I love that. At the end of the day, the more times you can interact and engage with your fans, regardless of the platform, the better. And it's a great way to wrap up the conversation, I guess. And we're going to have a little more fun with you, John, coming up in our Playing with Pruitt segment. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat coming right back at you. All right, that was this episode's shareable stat, and very relevant to tonight's conversation. It's all about Snapchat and how their live stories receive, on average, 20 million unique views in a 24-hour period. That's a lot of eyeballs, and I'm sure John doesn't mind when when the Diamondbacks are featured with some of those live stories on Snapchat Wednesdays, as he spoke to, they get on there once in a while and really increases the national brand for the Diamondbacks. Is that something that really helps you guys, or is it more you guys need to focus more on who can actually come to games?
I think it doesn't hurt by any means. Like I mentioned before, it's allowing us to expose our brand and our team to millions of people. I don't know that we hit 20 million when we were on our story, but it was probably pretty close. So it's the more eyeballs, the better, as long as the content we're sharing is good. So
not bad at all. All right, John, we talked a lot about Snapchat already, but now we're going to have a little fun with you, having a great conversation. We're talking to John Pruitt, social media supervisor for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Are you now ready for the Playing with Pruitt section?
Let's do it.
All right, number one for you. The best tip for in-game tweeting for sports in general, and especially for baseball?
I think it's really just the balance that's involved. Not necessarily tweeting too much, not tweeting too little. Kind of, I think it takes a feel for it, and it's hard to explain. But the more you're following the conversation socially, following the conversation on Twitter, and really understanding, you know, what are fans talking about, and being able to share in that excitement and drive that excitement is critical. I would say too, being able to share as many visual components as possible. I think it's just true of social media in general, but sometimes for us, you know, it may be better to wait a little bit until we have a good photo, which we've actually recently worked with our team photographer to get photos in almost close to real time to be able to share with our Twitter updates and share that information. You know, GIFs, just really focusing on the more visually compelling aspects of it and giving fans a better experience than purely just tweeting play-by-play.
Totally. A couple of great tips came out of that. I think, you know, one, listening to your fans and amplifying what they're talking about, definitely really good. And also giving fans content that they want to share. You know, give them that GIF, that video that they'll be able to push out to their friends as well and say, you know, look at this great catch by David Peralta, for example. All right, number two for you, John.
I got one more too. I'd say
yes.
Just being prepared. So having content that's kind of ready to go.
Oh, so huge!
Really important. We've really worked, and we're trying to grow kind of our library of content that we can use, just depending on what happens in the game. But that's been a pretty big focus for us this year, is just having canned stuff that's good to go, depending on what happens during the game.
I mean, you got to have those Goldschmidt happens, you know, images and tweets ready to go, because you know any given time that Paul Goldschmidt's going to do something crazy worth tweeting about. Number two for you, John. One good thing and one maybe more difficult challenge about having the oversight of MLB Advanced Media for digital.
I mean, they're an incredible help from a technical standpoint. Cutting GIFs, providing with photos, video highlights. You know, they have a team that basically helps us around the clock, even though they're all based, or the majority of them are based in New York. I think one area where it gets a little complicated is, it is an extra layer if we're trying to do anything on the sponsorship side, which it has its pros and cons, but, you know, anytime we're trying to do something, it just obviously adds another layer and just makes it a little more complex and a little more challenging to pull off. But at the same time, it also helps. They're working with 30 other teams, and you know they're developing an expertise for it that we may not be developing because we're not in a situation that they've already experienced before. So just being able to kind of bounce ideas off them and learn from their experiences with the other clubs has been incredibly helpful for us.
Yeah, very interesting stuff too, to think about how, you know, there's no right or wrong way to do it. You know, packaging those digital assets for a bigger sponsorship play with all the MLB clubs versus having every club kind of out on their own. It's interesting stuff to hear for sure. All right, number three for you. I'm excited about hearing this answer. The non-Major League Baseball pro sports team does the best job on social media, and why?
I really like what the Atlanta Hawks did this past year. you know, they obviously had a lot of success on the court, and that feeded, you know, or fed a lot of what they were able to do. But they're doing some pretty innovative things, specifically on Twitter. The Kings, I think, have been very good. You know, they can get away, I think, with a little bit more than some other teams are, just because of their market and their brand. But they've been pioneers in terms of developing that voice that really resonates with fans. The 49ers, I think, do an incredible job with their Instagram account. I've been following them as someone who grew up in Northern California and was a fan from going all the way back to the late 80s. I'm a little biased, obviously, but they do a really good job of showing compelling imagery and invoking emotion through Instagram, which I can definitely attest to. So I think those would probably be the three or three of the non-Major League Baseball teams that I think do a great job. But there's a lot out there. I mean, I follow a ton of teams, and you know, there's a lot of them that do a really, really good job.
Some excellent examples, and there's so many teams out there that you can always learn from, and it's always important to check up on what everyone's doing. And speaking of being really good at what you do, you guys are, like I said, are really good at Snapchats. Number four for you, John. Your number one tip for effective use of Snapchat for a sports team.
I think it's really just being able to have a plan for the story you're going to tell, and having the checklist of items of things that you want to hit within that story, and then knowing that you're not going to have total control over it, especially if you're trying to cover what's going on within the game. But having that core structure in place, and then just kind of filling in the gaps as you see things. And then just being prepared, being in the right situation. We have, usually one of our interns who actually does, a lot of the Snapchat stuff for us in game, where they're walking around the ballpark looking for different things to add to the story. So, I don't know if that's one tip or multiple tips, but
either way, it's very well said. Having a plan and being prepared. I mean, that's a really good tip. It's to not just go into it and fly by the seat of your pants if you want to tell a really effective, cohesive story. All right, number five, John. I'm really psyched about this one. Tell me your most memorable day at the helm of D-back social media.
Gosh, there's been a few. 2011 especially was, you know, there's a lot of memorable days in there just with the way the season went. I'll give you a couple that happened late in the season. I'll give you three, actually. One was when we clinched the division against the Giants on our home field, just being able to capture content that we'd never really captured before. You know, back then we didn't have incredible access to the clubhouse, but on that day we did, and just being able to share photos and videos and things of the players celebrating, you know, obviously stuff that I'll never forget, just being a part of that. I also learned something from that experience, and that's to make sure I'm conscious at all times of where the cameras are. Because after the game, I happened to be standing directly behind the TV camera during an interview with one of our players, tweeting, and started getting texts from my friends. Why are you hogging TV? So apparently not knowing that I was video bombing the interview.
I love that.
So that was a pretty memorable experience. Then a few days later, we were actually trying to lock down home field in the first round of the playoffs, and we're playing the Dodgers at home. Game went to extra innings. We gave up, I think, five runs in the top of the ninth. And I was all ready to pack up and go. I mean, it was back when – it's not like how it is now where you prepare graphics at the end and you, you know, share a lot of content and articles. And, you know, just kind of the end of the game was the end of the game. You'd tweet a little update and just call it a day.
Right.
And so I was all ready just to kind of – pack up and go and maybe get home and then let fans know, okay, Diamondbacks lost. And I was actually doing that, walking out of the stadium, and in the bottom of the 10th with two outs, we started to mount a ridiculous rally, got a few guys on, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll just sit and watch and just tweet it from here after we lose. And few runs come across, and so now we're down by three. Still two outs. Guy walks up, bases loaded, hits a walk-off grand slam.
Oh, wow.
So I remember I was like, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe this just happened. And at that point, it was just kind of like emotions took over and was tweeting out kind of what the fans were feeling. And one of the tweets I even put in there was, that's why you never leave a game early, even though I was prepared to do just that. So
almost guilty of it yourself. That is fantastic.
And then one of the hardest parts, I think, of that season, that was the first year that I was doing social for the Diamondbacks, was when we went to the playoffs and we made it to game five against the Brewers and we were winning, and then we ended up losing the lead late and losing the game in extra innings, I believe. I think we lost it in 10. Was how then, it, like, everything just came to such an abrupt halt. You know, this incredible season that we had been having was over, and it was something I hadn't really given a ton of thought to, but in the moment really had to think about how do we message this to our fans? You know, it's a very different situation than what I faced, mm-hmm. You know, as the social person for the Diamondbacks. And, you know, I think we did a good job just thanking the fans for an incredible season. And you see a lot of that now with how teams handle those situations. But I know that was a new thing for me for sure. And, just something that I'll never forget, just seeing the outpouring of emotion from our fans. That's probably one of the biggest thrills of what, you know, we social people get to do, is just, you know, when things are going good, just, you know, feeding off that emotion that the fans are putting out there. And especially when they're tweeting back at us and, you know, sharing stuff that we're putting out there, like, truly, you understand the impact that social can have.
Really get to feel that emotion. I love that. How about number six for you, John? Coming to the end here with John Pruitt, social media supervisor with the Arizona Diamondbacks. How would you describe the Diamondbacks brand and personality, and how do you go about using social media to really propagate that?
I'd say fan friendly is the number one thing. So I think I mentioned this a few times, but just using social as a customer service tool, making sure we're listening to what fans are saying, we're sharing their content, we're responding to what they're saying, or favoriting it, just to at least acknowledge that we're seeing what they're putting out there and we appreciate it.
Love that.
Or even, you know, going on Instagram, liking their photos that they're putting out. We do a lot of that as well. And that's probably just the number one thing, is just using social for the way that it's intended, is to.
That's perfect. I love that answer. And doing those little things can just go such a long way. Just to acknowledge that you appreciate those fans tweeting about you, posting about you, and want them to continue doing it. That's great. Number seven for you, John. The most important skill a social media and sports pro needs.
I think probably just knowing how to communicate with others and kind of understanding your audience. And I alluded to it earlier when we were talking about the best tip for in-game tweeting, just having that feel for how things are going and, you know, the right time to say something and the right way to say it is extremely critical. I mean, And you don't always nail it. I think it also, you know, takes being able to take risks and know you're going to make mistakes, but just being able to learn from those mistakes. Because social media, it's evolving. It's new. You know, there's people who have been doing it for a few years, like myself. But, I think that are better at it than others. But we're all learning as we go, I think. It's evolving so quickly and changing that you can't ever be complacent and think that you know everything and this is the way to do things, because that may be true now, but 2 months from now it's going to be something totally different.
Oh yeah, and definitely the more you use it, the more you become more comfortable with it, I think the better that instinct becomes, and that's clearly something that you've gotten more fluent with and more comfortable with over time, it sounds like. All right, number eight for you, John. I want to hear this one. It's a two-parter. First, have you had a churro dog and a D-bat dog at the Diamondbacks games? And second part of the question is, what is the best food at an MLB park outside of Arizona?
I actually have not had either a churro dog or a D-bat dog, believe it or not.
Oof, well, I'm sure your arteries thank you for that.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest reason why I try to eat healthy. But also I'm always working a lot during the games. So for me, just to be able to sit down and eat this giant churro dog with a donut or an 18-inch corn dog that's wrapped with 6 feet of bacon is...
And then avoid the food coma, right. Or something.
So I fully intend to try both of them at some point because I have seen them. I have seen them up close, and they do look delicious. They look as good as they do in the photos, but just haven't been fortunate to try them. As for the best food at an MLB park outside of Arizona, there's quite a few. I know growing up in the Bay Area, the garlic fries at AT&T Park were always pretty amazing. I didn't actually go to a ton of Giants games because I grew up as an A's fan, being from the East Bay. But I know when I did go to AT&T Park, it was very hard to resist the smell of those garlic fries.
Ooh, I've heard that before, and those sound pretty good right now. All right, number nine for you, John. The D-backs player that is the best on social media and why?
That is a really good question. A lot of our players they aren't on social a ton. And I think that's just true throughout baseball because these guys are playing games almost every single day. They don't have a ton of downtime. And when they do have downtime, they prefer to spend it with their family or just be completely removed from the sport. So,
makes sense.
Daniel Hudson, I know, is really good on Twitter. We had a former player of ours, Brandon McCarthy, who's on the team the past few years, was actually, he's probably one of the best.
He's great, yeah.
At social from an athlete standpoint. And then some of the younger guys who are pretty active with it on Twitter and Instagram, kind of sharing. Really what I like seeing is when they're sharing like their thoughts and their emotions and the more human side of it. You know, during the off season, you know, they may show what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And just giving fans kind of that perspective. And it's not something that everybody likes to do, is, you know, give a little inside view of kind of what's going on off the field. But I think that's what fans really get a kick out of, is, you know, what is this person like?
Totally. And I will say it was awesome to see Daniel Hudson tweeting about the team, even when he was going through a long rehab. That was really cool to see. Last one for you, John. If not the Diamondbacks this year, who is your pick for the World Series winner in 2015? If it's not Diamondbacks,
and you know, we're still hanging around.
Totally,
I wouldn't say to count us out just yet, but you know, this year I don't think the expectations were for us to win the World Series, but you never know.
Of course, you never know at all. But if it who would be the runner up, or who's the money on if it's not the D-backs?
That's a good question. It seems like it's pretty open this year. You know, I think, I don't know if there's that one team that has just been completely outplaying everyone's. I know the Cardinals and the Pirates have both been very good in the National League. Royals have been really good in the American League. The A's are kind of my American League team since that's what I grew up rooting for, but they're not having the great of a season either. Mm-hmm. I would probably, I don't know, if I had to, I think it'd be cool to see the Royals do it just because it's been so long since they've won one. Same thing with the Pirates. So maybe, you know, if it's not going to be the Diamondbacks, it's not going to be my hometown A's team, I'll root for a Royals Pirates World Series. And if either one of those teams wins it, I'll be happy for those two teams. They both have incredible fan bases and, great sports cultures, you know, in Kansas City and Pittsburgh. So I think it'd be really entertaining to watch. I think two teams, I know the Royals were there last year and got really close. So maybe they can come back and finally finish the job.
Very nice. All right, John, you survived your Playing with Pruitt segment. Now your chance to give your social media all-star to follow, someone on Twitter or a blogger, who they are and why they're worth following.
So aside from at D-backs?
Of course.
No, I think, some of the ones I enjoy, I follow, you do a great job of sharing social content, which clearly they're going to be following you, otherwise they won't be listening to this podcast.
Thank you very much.
But, and I know, like, Jessica Smith, you know her very well, she's at War Jess Eagle. She does a great job of just sharing social content, and definitely, she has her own blog that she puts together. Tariqa Maud, who does the SMS Sports Chat, I don't participate very often just because I'm usually working when it's going on, but
right,
every Thursday at 6, for fans who don't know, hashtag SM Sports, that is something I keep up with and at least look at if I'm not able to kind of follow along while it's happening, just to pull some tidbits, some things that other teams might be doing or other brands that might be doing that I'm not necessarily seeing since I don't follow everybody. And then the basic sites, you know, your Mashable, which is pretty good, social media, et cetera. I think they're at Social Media 411 are both really good with sharing kind of real time updates on what's going on with social media. So those are some of the ones that I follow and I stay connected with to make sure I'm keeping up to date with what's going on.
Hey, that's great. We asked for one. We got a lot of good recommendations there. I love it. And lastly, John, where can we find you as well as the D-backs on social media?
I am at Just Pruitt, JustPreWitt on Twitter. And you can follow the Diamondbacks at D-backs, D-B-A-C-K-S on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and Facebook.
Excellent. Well, John, we cannot thank you enough for your time tonight, especially in the middle of the long season. And we really wish you the best the rest of the year. We hope the Diamondbacks do make an incredible comeback. And at the very least, we know that the fans will be having fun every day of the year.
I certainly hope so. Thanks, Neil, for having me. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, thank you so much again to John Pruitt, social media supervisor for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Really a guy I got to know pretty well when I was living in Arizona. Really thoughtful guy, really sharp and articulate, as you guys can see. And really generous with his time to be talking to us in the middle of the season with the Diamondbacks right in the thick of the trade deadline and still in the race as well in the National League West. So really a thanks again to John for joining us. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Hope you guys learned something. Hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and get more information on the podcast as well as other content from me, your host, Neil Horwitz, on my website, dsmsports.net. Thanks so much again, and we'll see you next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.